Today we continue our series on the foundations of our faith. What are the foundational things that we confess as we talk about Christianity to the world around us and as we interact with those that may have questions about Christianity? And today we are looking at this foundational statement that Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate. Why is this foundational? In 1961, the first physical evidence for Pontius Pilate's existence was discovered. And up to that point, there was no physical evidence, nothing that you could hold on to and say, this points to Pontius Pilate being a real person that lived. Now, there was a paper trail and notions of him. We have recordings of him in the Gospel, and there's other ancient historians that spoke of his existence, but as far as physical evidence, something that you could hold on to, there was nothing until 1961. So in the greater world outside of the church, Pontius Pilate was either someone who may not have existed or someone so minuscule in history that there was not much to support his existence. Yet in the Church of Jesus Christ, we have been speaking about Pontius Pilate since the Gospels were first written. Pontius Pilate was mentioned in the Apostles' Creed, which, let's say it's about 1600 years old. It's not from the Apostles. It's not even first century. Its current development is about 400. So let's say we have 1600 years of the church mentioning Pontius Pilate's name as they talk about the very basics of what the Christian faith is. Now that's really interesting, because when you look at the Apostles' Creed, there are only two non-divine humans mentioned in the Apostles' Creed. There's the Virgin Mary and Pontius Pilate. Isn't that interesting that Pontius Pilate and Jesus' suffering is elevated to a foundational statement in our faith? Now, Pontius Pilate was most likely born in Italy, and he moved to Palestine to take the position of governor, or more specific, prefect. There's discussion about the New Testament uses the term governor, and there's some historians that are, you know, let's be very specific. It is governor, but prefect is his official title. So he's a prefect. His role is to keep the peace primarily, and he's to promote Rome and serve as a judge and serve as a local magistrate representing Rome way off in Palestine. Now, according to the historian Philo, Pontius Pilate received his position from his mentor, who was a military commander. And Pilate is described by Philo as, this is a great quote, being one who was greedy, inflexible, cruel, and who resorted to robbery and oppression. So this is one of the few historians that mention him, and this is the line that we have, that basically he's a very, very bad man. Pilate was said to have been one who hated Jewish customs. And when he arrived in Palestine in 26 AD, one of the first things that he did was he brought embossments of the emperor and had them placed around Jerusalem. Now, if you understand some of the background of New Testament history, the image of the emperor was to be worshipped because there's two competing gods in Israel. There's the God of the Bible and there's Caesar. And Pilate comes and he puts all these pictures of Caesar up around, or these carvings of Caesar, and says, basically, "Behold your God." This caused somewhat of a revolt in Palestine, and it upset the Jews very much. Emperor worship officially entered Jerusalem in 26 AD, and the Jews revolted. Pilate had a huge mess to clean up because the Jews would not back down. So this caused a tension between Pilate, who's representing Caesar, and the Jews that were to be basically kept under control. Now later, Pilate had this idea that there were new aqueducts that needed to be constructed, and he needed a source for that funding. And the source that Pilate came up with was money from what's called the Corbanus. And the Corbanus is part of the offering at the temple. So you can imagine what that does. He says all of this offering that is being collected at the temple is going to the government to pay for aqueducts. And this doesn't go over well. Again, the Jews revolt, and what Pilate does is he calls in plain clothed troops to have daggers in hand to keep the crowds controlled, and there was a lot of bloodshed in Jerusalem. On another occasion, Pilate had the military intercept a sect of Jews who were searching for some sacred vessel, and that also got bloody, and it resulted in Pilate losing his job as governor. This is something that happened after Jesus. He loses his job because he's not able to get along with the Jews, and he's constantly causing problems for Caesar, who wants to control this group of people. But that ended with bloodshed and many Jews losing their lives. So that background is just to show you that Pilate is not a softy. Pilate is not one that we would call compassionate, and he's not even one that we would call just. We look at the New Testament and we read about Pilate, and without understanding some of the background, you wonder why, if he sees this man as innocent, if he sees Jesus Christ is innocent, why doesn't he just say, "I will stand on justice, Jesus is innocent, that's the end of the story"? It's because Pilate, because of his foolish governing, has caused revolt after revolt and upheaval and bloodshed and tension with Rome and all of these problems with the government. Now, Pilate, of course, is most known for being the one who presided over the trial of Jesus, and he is caught up in the political hardship of having to choose between these two that I've mentioned, an innocent Jesus Christ and a Caesar who is being challenged to replace Pilate as governor. So, is he going to be a friend of Caesar? Is he going to be a friend of Jesus? Now, Pilate chooses to put Jesus to death even after stating three times that Jesus was innocent, confessing his innocence, and he still has Jesus put to death. Now, interestingly, Christian tradition is usually a phrase that means take it with a grain of salt, but Christian tradition says that Mrs. Pilate, whatever her name is, she becomes a Christian and follows Jesus Christ, and her prophetic utterances, so to speak, to her husband to have nothing to do with this man haunted Pilate for the rest of his life. And tradition says that he actually goes on to commit suicide because he's unable to shake the thoughts of Jesus Christ even after the whole thing is over. So what's Pilate do as he has this opportunity to choose between Jesus and pleasing Caesar? Now, what's important to understand is theologically, Pilate does exactly what God needed him or required him to do. And that's what Isaiah 53 says. God is the one who bruises Jesus. God's wrath poured out on Jesus Christ is why Jesus is put to death. Jesus doesn't get accidentally caught up in a political feud of the day. Jesus is put to death, and the human vehicle is both the Jews and the Gentiles, Pilate and the Jews, and yet God Himself is the one who strikes him. Now, in the text that we read, Pilate is giving the people the option between a man named Barabbas. And do you know what Barabbas' first name is according to the other Gospels? Jesus. So Jesus, Barabbas, and Jesus the Christ. Do you know what Barabbas means in Aramaic? Son of the Father. Jesus, Son of the Father. Or Jesus, Son of the Father. One of these men will be put to death and one will be released. Barabbas is a robber. Some accounts show that he may have been what we would call a domestic terrorist, somebody who is causing terroristic activity to occur. And Jesus Christ is the innocent God-man who comes in the flesh, the son of Jesse, the one who comes to Israel as the king of the Jews. And Pilate offers these two men before the people, and the people cry out for Jesus Barabbas. And they ask for Jesus Christ to be crucified. And the reason they ask for Jesus Christ to be crucified is because he claims to be the Son of God, which equates him with deity, which is the same as saying he considers himself an equal to God. And the fact that Jesus Christ is called the King of the Jews. Now we can go back in biblical history. We can go back to Judges, where we're studying in the morning. And remember, before Judges, there's Joshua, and he's faithful, and he's to bring the people into the land. And there's no successor named for Joshua. There's not a Moses and then Joshua, and then here's the new guy that's going to rule in the land. And the reason why is because the people are supposed to wait for the king. The people are supposed to wait for the Davidic line to begin and to ultimately result in Jesus Christ coming to die, to be the king who lays down his life for his people. And yet, the people, even as we saw this morning, they do not want to wait for the king. And here, the king has come, and Jesus Christ has been born, and Jesus Christ has taught, and he's lived a perfect life, and he's proven himself to be the Son of David, and he stands before the covenant community. And they say, "We have no king. Caesar is our king." Now that's a much fuller statement than if we were to try to contextualize and say, let's swap out king for president. We have no president. Barack Obama is our president. It's not the same. It's not the same statement. Caesar claims to be divine. He claims to be one who deserves to be worshipped. Caesar equates himself with God. So what Jesus is doing by claiming to be a king and claiming to be equal with God, it's the same thing that Caesar's doing. And yet they reject Christ for Caesar. Pilate is filled with fear. He calls on Jesus to answer him. He tells him, you know, I have the power to set you free. And Jesus doesn't answer, as Isaiah 53 says. He stands as a sheep before his shearers. He is going to suffer. And he stands silently. Now, of course, Pilate does not think that Jesus is guilty. He calls him innocent. But for Pilate, the fear of men and the fear of the masses and the fear of Caesar is more important to him than the fear of God, or even more important than justice or ruling righteously. Pilate knew, but he did not know. You see that, children? Pilate knew, but he did not know. Pilate knew the truth that Jesus was an innocent man. Pilate is not one, as I said, that's a softy. He's going to look and he's going to do whatever he can to make Jews' lives miserable, because that's what he's done so far as governor. And yet Jesus stands before him and he interviews Jesus and he says, there's nothing here. Nothing. And Pilate isn't looking to have Jesus get off legally. He's trying to find something that he can accuse him for. He says, there's nothing. This man is innocent. So what he does is he sends Jesus to be flogged. And then he sends him to be crucified. Why do we make a big deal of Jesus suffering under Pontius Pilate? Can't we just say Jesus suffered? And we know that Pilate is representative of all the sufferings of the life of Christ. Pilate is the pinnacle of Jesus Christ suffering for something that he didn't do. All of Jesus' sufferings in this whole life, all of everything, all the discipline he'd ever received from his parents, all of the anger from the Jews, all of the humiliation through this life was unjust towards Jesus. And Pilate stands as the pinnacle, the one that exemplifies the humiliation of Christ. Here's what one Reformation era catechism says, and I think it's very helpful. What do you understand by the word suffered? Answer: that during his whole life on earth, but especially at the end, Christ sustained in body and soul the anger of God against the sin of the whole human race. This he did in order that by his suffering, as the only atoning sacrifice, he might set us free, body and soul, from eternal condemnation and gain for us God's grace, righteousness, and eternal life. It goes on, why did he suffer under Pontius Pilate as judge? And the answer, so that he, though innocent, might be condemned by a civil judge, and so free us from the severe judgment of God that was to fall on us. You see, it's very important in the Scriptures how Jesus dies. Jesus does not die in a chariot accident. We don't read the New Testament and get to the end of Jesus' life and see, and then, you know, he was trampled by a horse with a chariot following. And we don't see Jesus dying of natural causes. We don't get to the end of his life and his family's there around his bed and he closes his eyes and drifts into eternity. Jesus doesn't even die in a riot. There were opportunities for that as he enraged people and riots formed and stones were thrown and Jesus was able to slip out. He doesn't die by accident. He doesn't die by natural death. He doesn't die violently at the hands of men before his time. He dies at the hand of the civil magistrate. Meaning that there is a process, a due process that was done. And we look at Roman justice. And Roman justice in its time was really one of the most advanced forms of justice in the world. It required evidence. It required witnesses. It required a judge that was trained to make a decision. Pilate was that judge. Pilate is the civil magistrate. And Pilate says, he's innocent. He's innocent. He's innocent. Yet he will die. Consider that. The lawful authority of the first century declares him innocent, yet puts him to death. See, Jesus died an innocent death, and he suffered innocently through his whole life, which we call the humiliation of Christ. Yet God, as Isaiah 53 says, lays on him the iniquity of us all. Jesus suffers under Pontius Pilate so that he may bear our guilt and so that his innocence can be legally declared by a civil judge. So it's important that Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate, one, in order that we might know that he was condemned by God himself on account of our sins. Jesus was condemned, but it wasn't Pilate that condemns him. The Father condemns him. The Father condemns him. And because he is condemned by God himself, he is able to make total satisfaction before the judgment seat of God for the sins of those for whom he dies. Jesus suffered sin at the hand of God so that those who would have faith in him would not suffer, would not be condemned before God. And secondly, Jesus suffers under Pontius Pilate so that we may know his innocence. As I said, Pilate is a professional judge, and Jesus stands before him, and Pilate finds no fault with him. There's no good reason why Pilate should have put Jesus to death. There's studies, lawyers have studied the trial of Christ and listed the number of ways that the law, the Roman law, was broken at the trial of Jesus. Yet Pilate, fearing Caesar, puts him to death. All orchestrated within the sovereignty of God, all prepared before the world began, so that sinners who were not innocent could be declared innocent. You see that? Here's an innocent man declared guilty, so that guilty men may be declared innocent. Jesus suffers under Pontius Pilate. He's put to death so that the scriptures would be fulfilled. Texts like Isaiah 53, texts like that first promise, that proto-euangelion, Genesis 3:16, that one would come, and the one is the man would come. And the serpent would crush the man's heel. And the man would crush the serpent's head. First person we meet after that promise is made is a young man, a baby named Cain, which translates as the man. Cain was not the man. Jesus Christ comes and he lives perfectly. He lives innocently. The serpent thinks he has the upper hand. And it's the will of God to crush him. Jesus Christ is crushed by the serpent, as the first promise said, so that he may crush the serpent. And Pilate, maybe not listening in Sunday school, declares Jesus to be someone as he presents the king before the Jews. Remember, behold your king. Behold your king. We have no king. Crown of thorns, purple robe, mockings. They put before the Jews a court jester, a clown. And he's a suffering king. And Pilate says, and we'll end with this, behold the man. Pilate put forth Jesus for who he was, the King of the Jews, the one who would come to crush the head of the serpent, and the one who is the suffering servant, Isaiah 6:53. So behold the King of the Jews suffered under Pontius Pilate. Amen.